Sinead Niall Conn is out and about. I don't know if she got a bus or not, or whether she drove. Hello, Sinead.
Hi, Ray. I drove today. I drove as far as Cabinteely Community School. You might be able to hear the students in the background there. It's September, the 4th of the month, and they're back at school, and I'm going back to school today. I'm going to learn something new, and I'm going to enrol myself in a class car maintenance, because the adult education courses are starting here in Cabinteely in the next few weeks or so in September, and they have so many different options for people who want to further themselves, who want to learn something new. They have Italian for holidays, they have cake decorating, they have art, the history of art, and they also have car maintenance. And I was thinking about my role as reporter on this show, and I'm forever out and about in my Volkswagen Golf. But what would happen if I was on my way to a report down the country and next thing a little flashy orange light appeared on the screen near my steering wheel? What would I do? Would I have a panic? Would I have to call roadside assistance? Or would I learn something today that might help me should that ever happen when I'm out and about? So yeah, I'm going to have a lesson today from Paul Dalton, who runs the course out here. He's the teacher, and the car maintenance course, they teach everything. I suppose the basics, especially when you think about what you need to know when you are going out day after day in your car. Would you have any idea of what those basics might be, or things that you know yourself? I know you're on your bike a lot of the time.
Yes. Well, there's two things there. Firstly, I was the other evening, it was a lovely bright evening, but I was thinking to myself, now the evenings are closing in, because it was bright at 8 o'clock, but by 8:30 it was nearly dark. And I was thinking, how am I going to fill the long winter evenings? And I was thinking about maybe doing some sort of course. And I know there are thousands of evening courses all over the country, like the ones that they offer in Cabinteely Adult Education. And I haven't decided what I'm going to do yet. The other thing is that of late, as in the last few years, I've started doing things for myself.
Hey.
No, like I'd look at something and go, OK, now before I would have got it, a tradesperson to do it, and that's fair enough. And sometimes you have to, it might be a specialist thing. But say doing up a room, I decided I'm going to do that. And I did all the painting and all that, took the doors off the wardrobes and sanded them down and repainted them. And then things in the garden, I start doing the garden as well. And so what I do is I look at a job that needs to be done. And I think, can I do it? What technology do I need to do it? How expensive is that? And does it all make sense in the end? And that's my approach to life now. It's a different approach, but it means you have to upskill on a number of things.
I bet you what makes sense in the end is the self-satisfaction as well.
I didn't want to use that word because it sounds like gloating.
but you should be able to gloat. You know, if you've put the work in, if you've managed to make something happen. I don't know what's up with my algorithm, but I seem to get lots of videos of people doing different DIY projects as well each time I'm on Instagram. Okay. And there are so many people out there that are just, maybe purchasing things that don't cost a lot of money, but upcycling them and making them appear much nicer than they did when they first purchased them.
Yeah, it's that hands on your hips moment, Sinead, when it's all complete and you just take one step back, put your hands on your hips, put your chest out and you go, I did that.
And then you take a few photos and put them on the grid, of course. It didn't happen if it's not on the grid.
Anyway, your original question, I couldn't service a car to save my life at the moment. And of course, cars are getting a lot more electronically sophisticated and are probably more difficult to service. But anyway, I'm looking forward to hearing from Paul Dalton, who's a car maintenance teacher. And on your way out to Cabinteely, you had your microphone and you do what you do. And what did you do?
I do be talking to people from time to time when I'm out and about. And earlier, because this is a skill, to be able to fix your car when you're at the side of the road, to know what's wrong, I would say that it is a life skill.
Yes.
So the question I asked people was, what life skill do you wish you had? And the first person I met was Gillian.
Playing the guitar. When people are together, it just brings joy and fun, yeah.
Would you think about learning?
Yeah, the kids have just been offered guitar lessons as an after-school activity, and that's what had it in my brain. I was like, I wouldn't mind doing that as a kid. If the kids pick it up, then maybe I might learn it with them.
Do you think they'll mind if Mom tags along to the classes?
I think they will mind. I tag along a note already, so I think they'd want their space.
Well, it's September, so maybe by December you might be playing, strumming away to Fairy Tale of New York.
Yeah, that would be great, as opposed to a happy birthday. It's probably about the limits I could do.
Do it, Gillian. Do it.
Do it. And it's such a skill to have as well. Oh, yeah. You know, you've been there at the end of the night when somebody wants a bit of a sing song. Mm. Absolutely, if you have a song, that's great. But if you have a guitar, even better still.
You know, I'm learning to play the drums, and I'm making inroads. Unfortunately, you can't bring a drum kit along to a house party. It doesn't quite work.
But the spoons, you could. And that's kind of similar. It's percussion.
Yeah, I don't know how people feel about somebody who takes out a set of spoons at the end of the night. But anyway, so that was Gillian and her guitar. Who was next?
Next up, Desi.
To be a good footballer like me son Bradley, you should see him on the ball. He's bleeding great. He is. He's like Ronaldo, Messi. How he does, I don't know. I'd be confused looking at him, you know. Hannah, she's a great baller as well. She plays football. And Sean, if I could only have been like them and better at the old football and what have you.
It mightn't be a life skill, but it's certainly a skill to be able to play.
Well, it is. To control the ball now, to control that ball as you're running. So it is a skill in itself, you know. And then to put it in the back of the net, you know, everyone wants a win.
Man, Desi.
The hand on hip moment, everyone wants a win or to score a goal.
Yeah, so it's life skills. People looking back at their lives and going, I wish I learnt more about that. Is that it?
That's it. But then there are other people maybe who might think about it in another way. Like you could say that a life skill is parallel parking. And that's one that I haven't perfected just yet, but I am practicing. You could say that a life skill is swimming. But you could say that a life skill is being compassionate as well, or having empathy. Yeah. You know, I think that it's quite a broad spectrum for this question. And what I really enjoyed was listening to the different answers and how different people interpreted the question as well. Like Maria, who I met earlier.
I'd like to write a book about my life, but it's the spelling is the difficulty. But I often write little bits in my diary, but then I say, no, that's crap, and I might tear it out and then throw it out.
Maybe the life skill you need is confidence to keep going.
Exactly, definitely.
How can you build up your confidence? Does it come with practice?
It has to.
So you've got to take out the diary and start writing again?
It's September now, so next month it could start.
Do it.
Well, I'll try my best.
The reason I'm laughing is it's only September 4th, but Maria says I'll do it next month.
But do it. I think that could be the theme of today's show. Do
yes,
it.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, buy your or learn that skill or take out the diary, write again, have the confidence or build the confidence.
Yeah, so that was Maria. And next year you met up with John.
Difficulties of overcoming reading, filling in forms and things like that.
They can be overwhelming at times.
Very much so. I have my daughter who lives with me, thank God, that she helps me out and everything. Any other chance in life, I do, but I find that very hard. God help poor people and all folks who live on their own that can't read and write, and they want others to help them. And everything nowadays is you go online to do. Everything is send an email, send this, you know. It's not fair in the older generation.
Mm.
So I have to agree with John.
Yeah. Literacy is a big thing. We've done a few items on it in the past, and we must come back to it because, as John says, everything is online now. There was a time when you go into an officer and you'd be able to talk to somebody and they could help you fill out your form. But now you have to do it online, so you need literacy skills. So we must come back to that. That was John. Who would you meet next?
Next up was Jude.
I wish I had willpower. All the plans I have in my life never get further than my couch. I wish I was able to follow through. I have great intentions. I could pave the road to heaven in intentions, but they don't go any further and I get a pain in my left eye with it.
Yeah.
Sing it, sister.
I don't know if willpower is a life skill. Is it?
I'd put it down as a life skill.
Would you? Yeah.
To have it, it might make your life easier as well. I tend to put things on the long finger. I'm a big fan of the long finger.
Are you?
So I need to get rid of that.
You're a procrastinator.
Procrastinator. Yeah.
Yes. Just do it. Just do it.
Just do it. But then you're like, OK, but I'll just do this first, or I'll just tidy the apartment before I can focus on what I actually need to do, and that there's time pressure involved with it.
Yeah. I'm sure people have advice on procrastination, because people have procrastinated in the past and they've overcome it. So if you have any advice for our Sinead, who's a procrastinator, and for, who was that, Jude or Deborah? That was
Jude.
Jude, that you might share it with us. So Deborah's next.
For me, the most important thing would be to know basic first aids, to be able to help anybody if they are like in an emergency. It's always, always useful not to have to wait for an ambulance. In some cases, you can save a life.
Very important.
Very important. And that's something now that I have to put on my list and not procrastinate about, because, you know, you see how CPR is done on television and you think you have an idea of it, but you actually need to put it into practice. Not a case of CPR as such, but, you know, to have the class, to have the lesson, to have the mannequin and do it.
And there are classes all over the country. Myself and David, who used to be a producer on the show, went into the Irish Heart Foundation and we got a class in CPR and using a defibrillator and all that. And it was very helpful. And it just demystifies the whole thing, and it means that you're not going to panic in a certain situation. I've seen it work firsthand, and it, you know, I saw a life been saved, and it's a real eye opener. And two people in a gym, and if they hadn't been there, that poor man, you know, would have died, and there would have been family who would have been left without a father and partner and all that sort of thing. So it's so important. We were going to do, and we must come back to that as well. This is really good,
it's like
Sinead.
Like a brainstorming session.
No, it is. No, because
anything
we were,
else.
I think it was before COVID. We had the idea to front, you know, a national first aid day, so that on a particular day, everybody who provides courses around the country would open up, you know, just for one day in local community centre or wherever, and we would publicise it and we'd front it and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And we were a bit down the way with that, and then COVID hit, and of course the world changed. But we must revisit that. So thanks Deborah for that. Thank you, Deborah.
Cheers, Deborah.
And finally, Sinead.
Finally, Carol.
I wish I had more confidence in myself. Hmm. You just got out, you got a job, that was it. And I feel I could have been a much better version of myself if I had had more opportunities. Not that I regret anything I've done. Sure, life is life. I mean, I wouldn't have my three gorgeous kids and my three gorgeous grandchildren if I hadn't taken the steps I took. But I could have taken better steps, but then I wouldn't have had them. So it's a matter of weighing up good and bad.
Yeah.
It's a bit like the butterfly effect, isn't it? You know, if you do one thing, does it lead to other things in your life? And if you hadn't done that, you know, will you still have the same path?
Yeah, it's interesting because you're asking people really to voice their regrets in a way, you know.
It's a little bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah. Because you can't be looking back and, you know, thinking if I did this and if I did that, because we're here, you know, and we should live in the moment and look to the future sort of thing, but you're not living in the moment if you're looking to the future. Anyway, listen.
And you never know, though. Maybe today's Vox Pops have inspired Gillian to learn the guitar and Desi to take up soccer and Maria to actually put pen to paper and write that book. You know, it might have set a seed. Anyway.
We're changing the world. Yes. Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah. Now, where you're off to meet Paul. And Paul Dalton is a car maintenance teacher, and you're out in Cabinteely. And we're going to be talking about adult education. And that'll be when we come back to you in about a half an hour's time. Sinead, for the moment, thank you very much.
Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, architect Dermot Bannon joins us in studio. Super Spaces is on tonight, 9:35 RTE 1. Good to see you, Dermot.
Good to see you too, Ray.
I watched the second episode of Super Spaces.
Okay, what's in the second one?
Owen Colfer.
Oh yeah, isn't that cool?
Yes, his little pod out the back.
Westport
his
is
writing
in it.
Room. Yeah, Redmond Cabot, who I'm a big fan of. And Westport was there because you knew a guy from college who was the...
Simon.
The town architect.
Yes. So it's
And then there was your local local coffee truck was in it as well.
But it's... and then there's a vaulted house. See the vaulted house?
The vaulted house, yes. Concrete vaulted
house. Oh my God, isn't that stunning?
Is that in Ringsend or around there?
Sandymount.
Sandymount.
It's
right,
kind of in the middle of Sandymount Village. So, will I describe the series?
Will
you describe it? What did you think of it?
Well, I really enjoyed it.
Good.
I really, really enjoyed it because there are some of the things. There was the other one of, I recognise that guy. He's an architect from the north of Ireland.
Paddy Bradley. And he did grand designs. He won the entire grand designs
with
a container house. But he's built another one on top of Barney's Ruins, which was his uncle's old house.
So it was the ruin of a cottage, if you can imagine it. And on top of that, he put a shipping container.
Yeah.
It's
cool.
Crazy looking thing, but it works.
It works really, really well, because a lot of times when people have, and for him, the ruins held all these memories as a child. He used to play in them. You could kind of sanitize them completely by renovating them and putting a new roof onto it. It was so ruined, no matter what you did, it would never, ever feel like the place that he played in as a kid. So he just said, right, I'm going to play something on it. So all the ruins are still there. All the magic that is associated with his childhood is still there.
The bare stone.
And he kind of just cleverly kind of placed this container within it. And at nighttime, it's all lit up and you go up these stairs. It was just magic. Yeah. And he's a really lovely guy. And then
Catherine Spain down in Glenbay in County Kerry.
Yes. Oh my God, that place. Go on. They made me do a scene getting into the bath.
I wanted to talk to you about getting into baths.
Yes.
You do like getting into baths.
I don't like getting into baths. They like putting me in baths.
I'd say if people were to go to the RTE archives and go through all your work.
I'd say I've done about 1,700 baths at this. I don't know if I should say this or not, but I remember one time, because when you film those scenes, like we always go to somewhere. The reason I did it, because I remember the first time I ever went to one of these really cool houses was in New York, and we were on the 47th floor of this amazing building, and the bathroom had clear glass and everything, and I just got into the bath to see what it would be like. Yeah. And
fully clothed
and the director, that's really cool. So ever since then, get in the bath.
Yes.
And then we did one in Australia, and I remember there was like the whole crew were there, fixtures, the whole lot. The water was semi lukewarm, it was kind of freezing. I had my swimming togs on me, and they had no foam to put in the bath, and they wanted to do a scene with a candelabra and all that, so fairy liquid went into the bath. I get into the bath. And I remember somebody watching the thing, and they were saying, can somebody go back over that footage to make sure you can see nothing? And they're, what the hell? I was wearing swimming togs. Do you really think I got in front of the entire crew?
Now, just for people tuning in tonight, you are fully clothed in all the baths.
All the scenes.
So Catherine Spain's, it's a cottage, and on one side she's put a bathroom, the other side she's put a glass cube.
Yes.
And there's another bath down the way.
Yes.
Looking out on the lake.
And you sat
in both baths.
I sat in all, one fully clothed, the other.
Yeah, yeah. So it's super spaces tonight. I really enjoyed it.
Because I think, look, Incredible Homes is a series by itself.
Yes.
And sometimes people get a little bit, okay, that's 5 million. What's that got to do with me? This is all about really clever design, from houses, from little spaces, from coffee trucks, right up to the story of the design of Westport and how Westport transformed itself over the last 20 years.
So that's episode two. So if people tune in, expect that tonight.
Tonight we've got, what have we got on tonight? We've got the Rugby Experience in Limerick.
Yes.
Which is amazing. Which it's an amazing building by itself, but it also does an amazing thing for the town by moving a new landmark building right into the centre of the town. We've got one of the most beautiful houses I've ever been in. It's Karen Brown, the architect. I visited her houses before and everything, but this won House of the Year in Ireland last year, the RAI Awards. It's a beautiful old cottage, and she's put this amazing kind of floating extension in amongst all the fields. It's just magical.
You're passionate about it, and that's obvious, and that's why they all work so well.
Okay.
Yeah.
I loved making this, because it's super spaces, and it's not just houses, it's a little bit of everything, and there's something for everybody in it.
Now here's the thing, right?
Yeah.
I watched the second episode, and in that you're helping Lily Guinness do up a bus
for Electric Picnic.
What's it called? Trailer Park.
Yes.
In Electric Picnic.
Yeah.
And the final scene is you dancing with four clowns.
Yeah.
And you have a clown's wig on.
Yes.
When was that filmed?
That was last year.
Last year.
Yes.
Okay. Now that's a Dermot Bannon before, you know.
Yes.
You look back on that, because things have happened in the intervening time.
They
quite
have.
Recently.
Yes.
And you're a different man now.
Well, I'm hopefully the same man, but things have happened in the last month.
Right.
It's quite recent, actually. Yeah. And Yeah. Oh God, you're looking at me now just like, so go and explain it to me. to cut to the chase. Yeah. During the summer, we went away for a week's holidays, and kind of now, thank God, it was only a week's holidays. We went to Portugal. Day number three, I went to the water park with my two lads who are teenagers. Well, the youngest, Tom, is 12 and with James, 16. We went on everything. You know, those water slides where the floor drops out of it. As the day went on, and I was tired, but you know the way you're always tired going on holidays, and I was kind of, I just was putting everything down to just being tired and stressed, and that evening got back to where we're staying, and I just said, I'm going to go for a quick sit down on the bed, and I was in agony. So as the day went on in the water park, I was getting more and more tired. I got to the stage where I had to ask Tom to carry the rubber ring, right, to get to some of the slides, and I was literally putting it down to old age, and got into the bed, and I couldn't lie on my side, couldn't lie on my back, couldn't lie on my front, and I was there just, I bet you I broke a rib on one of the water slides. So I googled that, and of course as soon as you google it, yes, I definitely did, and they what immediate attention. So I was the only one who was insured in the rental car, so I drove myself into the hospital in Lagos in Portugal, and I was waiting there for hours, and I was really hungry at that stage because I hadn't eaten, and all I wanted to do was get out of there. And when I got seen, he said, no, you haven't got a broken rib. We'll do a chest x-ray. And they said, you've got a lung infection. And I had COVID 3 weeks before that, so it was all put down to that. And I said, Grant, I got better. It kind of, the symptoms kind of subsided, flew home. And then a week later, so if I'd gone for 2 weeks holidays, I would have still been over there. A week later, the pains came back, but more severe. Lying in the bed, 4 o'clock in the morning, really sharp pains down my side. I was pumping Nurofen into myself to try and get rid of them. Got up the next day and I said, I can't. I went up to, you know, the health insurers have these clinics, and I went up to there, and she said, yeah, you have a bit of a lung infection. It hasn't cleared up, but there could be something a bit more sinister. I'd like you to go and get a blood test done.
A word you don't want to hear.
No.
Sinister.
No. But she said, I just, for look, there's something okay. going in my, but she wasn't 100% sure. And I said, oh, Grant, I said, like, next week. She says, no, maybe now. So I said, okay, when I was starving again, I'm always starving. And I went home and I got a jumper because I knew I was going to be waiting for hours in A&E. And I went in, but I was just, I went in by myself because I said, I'd be home in a half an hour. Anyway, they did the blood test and it showed up that there might be some clotting going on. And then they hooked me up to, and they did a CT scan immediately. And I had what was known as a pulmonary embolism, which was a blood clot that came from my leg, had worked its way up, was in my lungs, in both lungs. And if I had kept going and ignoring it and taking Nurofen, that was restricting blood flow. Like a little part of my lung has died because the blood flow has been restricted. Now, it's not significant enough that to worry about, but that was only getting worse and worse and worse. And what happens if you don't spot it, if you don't do something, the pressure in your heart can cause a cardiac arrest. So because this oxygen is restricted.
So your lungs aren't producing a lot of oxygen. Your heart is trying to pump more oxygen around your body, and the strain is too much.
Exactly. And that's where the pain is coming from. Right. And that's where the shortness of breath, you know, because I was exhausted walking around the water park.
Because you weren't getting enough oxygen around.
So I'd done, so the morning that I went into hospital, I had done a gym class, I'd done a HIIT class, and I was wrecked after it. And I just, again, I was putting everything down to just getting a bit older. And
what age are you?
I'm 52.
Yeah,
it's all relative. But so, yeah, and then kind of, I was put into a room by myself in the A&E, and they kept coming in one after the other. They prodding and poking me, like they checked all my veins, they checked my heart, they checked everything. And I was there, I don't need to be in this room by myself. And they're, you just stay there. And they were kind of, so I was getting the news bit by bit, right, how this could have turned out if I hadn't have acted the way I did.
And how could it have turned out?
Well, you can die from it.
Okay.
That's you. Okay, right. The pressure, like the it's a clot. You're, right. And you know, if unless they dissolve, they're blocking oxygen going to your to everywhere, and the pressure can build up because your heart has to work so much to try and get, pump oxygen around. So if you've got loads and loads of clots and your heart is working really hard, it's kind of like the same as a blockage in one of your valves. Or
you are a healthy person, and
really healthy.
We've spoken about health before because
you told me to go to the doctor. But it was for other stuff.
No, but seriously, your dad died young, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and And also,
what age was your dad?
He was in his 60s, but he had a big heart attack when he was in, when he was 50.
Right. Okay.
So dad had a big heart attack when he was 50. And because of that, like, I'm really kind of, I watch my food. I'm always doing a bit of exercise. Yeah. I'm generally really good. And I honestly thought, and joking aside, the last time I'd never had my bloods done, I'd never had my cholesterol done, I'd never had anything done. And you were there, oh, Jesus, Dermot, you need to. Like, you're not that young. I know you're not old, but you're not that young. Yeah. And I actually had got them done after you. But part of it was just me feeling infallible.
Right.
And me feeling nothing can go wrong with me. I feel great. I look after myself. I'm all of these things. And I suppose this was really
But
weird.
I've heard before, Dermot, I've heard from other people.
Yeah.
This thing about, I just thought it was part of the aging process.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people put whatever they're going through down to just age.
Just
and that's quite dangerous.
Really? Well, I learned
yes,
that.
Yeah.
And I suppose I learned it was the week after. It kind of really hit me, because when you're there, you're kind of saved. That's the thing with what I have. Like, the clots, there's no point in going to a doctor, because they can do nothing for it. And I'm going to talk about it at the end, what to do if you spot the signs, because it's one of the biggest killers in Ireland, but nobody knows about it. Like, it's the
pulmonary embolism, is it?
It's the same as a heart attack, and it's in the same vein as a heart attack and a stroke, right?
Vein.
And it is. It's a thrombus.
Because it comes from a deep vein in the leg.
It's venous.
It?
I have all the. My consultant
don't
sent
worry,
me all.
Don't worry about
no,
that.
No, but he said, well, but it's venous thrombosis. It does. Right. It comes from a vein in the leg, travels the whole way up, and ends up in your lungs.
Right.
And the clot is big enough, it can be like, it can be quick and serious.
So you were saying, once you're there, you know, well, they've saved me.
Yes.
Right. So that's a nearly a positive experience.
Yes.
So then.
Then they come into you bit by bit, and they bring pamphlets.
Right.
And the pamphlets are the scary bit, because that's kind of, you need to read this now when you get home. This is how your life is.
So what's the heading on the pamphlet?
What do they call it? I'm a survivor. I'm a PE survivor. A pulmonary. I can't even say the word.
Pulmonary embolism.
You keep saying it. I'm much better off texting.
You're a survivor.
That was the word that freaked me out actually the most when that word is associated as you're a survivor. But they said, but you have. And the thing is that, you know, it going forward. Yeah, like at the moment, the treatment is very heavy kind of blood thinners, which will dissolve the thing. And there's two ways you can get a pulmonary embolism. One is if you've had an operation, you've had a fall, if you're pregnant, if you're on cancer treatment, like cancer and chemotherapy can cause clotting. Or if you've had any kind of an operation, 90 days after the operation, you can be really susceptible. Okay. So they're the kind of the easy ones to watch out for. Mine was what's known as a spontaneous one, where there's no reason.
No reason?
No reason.
Hereditary?
It could be. It could be genetic. It could have been COVID when I had it. But they can't pin it on anything. So with that...
And what about the flight? Did they mention?
No, they say, we went through it, like we had lots
of
chats.
Yes, of course, look.
Sorry. You're dying to know, aren't you, Ray? Yeah. There's no cliffhanger to this. Like, this is the thing, though. You see, there is no cliffhanger. There's no end. This is, when it's spontaneous, you live this new parallel life where you have to, in 3 months, I'm still at the early stages of this, and I have to go back for all the assessments in the next couple of months, and they'll tell me then what could have been, whether I'm going to be on medication for the rest of my life, and that's the thing, is that it's very difficult if they've solved it and saved my life potentially, to take me off the tablets. So I could be on blood thinners for the rest of my life.
And that has implications.
Of course it does. I work on building sites. You get cuts, you get nicks, you fall over. I can't do that. Can't go skiing because you can hit your head. You can, anything that might cause bruising is dangerous.
And is this the first time you have had any
huge
health problem?
Yeah, like the biggest thing I've ever had done was a root canal.
Right, okay.
And that was fairly horrendous. Yeah, yeah. We can talk about that next.
So it is about you feeling infallible and now feeling fallible.
Yeah.
And immortal and now mortal.
Immortal, and kind of that week afterwards, like, you know, and they did say to me, you'll get a bit of PTSD, and which I didn't believe them at the time. I'm sitting in the bed in the hospital getting all this information. It doesn't sink in that how dangerous it could have been. It doesn't sink in really until you go home and you think, oh my God, what happened there? Because by the time I found out, I was saved. you know, because they give you the injection straight away, and the injection is the thing that starts dissolving the clots. So you're there. You, like, it's there's no the treatment is immediate. You know, so, and that's it. Yeah, you're already
you're
on
saved,
the path.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing, is to get people in. If they can, and
I had symptoms,
but
in,
I'd gone to hospital in another country, and they missed it.
Yeah.
So that's and because
that's scary.
Because I was told it was an infection. So when I woke up with all those pains in the middle of the night, I just assumed it was the infection, and you know,
it was more dangerous than no diagnosis.
Yes.
In a way.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, because so that's the scary bit, that I wasn't scared when I got these really sharp pains down my side, because I'd already had a misdiagnosis. So that's the dangerous part.
And the PTSD of sorts.
Yes.
Did that hit you?
Yeah, it did. It's like, and there's another pamphlet for that. There's right. a pamphlet for everything. And the pamphlet, well, you know, take a bit of time to yourself. So I went for walks, and they were just, yeah, all it goes into your head, and it doesn't solve it. So it was actually, and we started talking about Electric Picnic there. And because we did a bit of work at Electric Picnic, I kind of have a little bit of an in, and I can get a few tickets. I had a ticket sorted for Electric Picnic, and I didn't want to go. I was there. I was dreading going. But my cousin was going with me. And she said to me, "We're going, and I don't care." And I said, "Oh." And it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Just getting out of my head, going and doing something a bit enjoyable. Because all the walking, all the rationalising, all the meditating, all the writing it down, the pluses, the minuses, none of that worked for me. I needed to just escape
you
it.
Did all that. You did all that.
I was trying. Well, of course you did.
Like, maybe this wasn't said on air, but you're a warrior. You're a self-confessed warrior,
yes.
aren't you?
Yes. Yeah. And of course, and I tried to rationalise it, and I did worry about all the, yeah, like I tried to be really strong in front of everybody, like you're that I'm not doing this, and you're not, like you're fallible now, and
yeah.
life changes, and it's do you know something, even it's kind of what I'm a month and a week on, I'm a lot stronger now than I was. Like, I don't, like, I am, like, I was sitting outside, and I was there. I was, this is the first time I've spoken about it, really, in a kind of, in a public way.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of my friends don't even know.
Do they not? Yeah.
No, because I just kind of, those who were around me at the time, no.
No.
Because
I find sometimes when something big like that happens, and you're fine with it, but until you have to
talk,
verbalise
it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I found myself in the past start, you know, crying about something, because I'd be fine and it'd be in my head, and then when you actually verbalise it, that's when the emotions pour out, you know.
Yeah, and I was sitting outside wondering, how am I going to get through this?
Yeah.
And the only reason I'm getting through it is because I know that maybe this information might save other people's lives.
Pulmonary embolism.
Right. See if you can spell it there.
And because it comes from a deep vein in the leg, one of the symptoms is a swollen leg.
Swollen leg, yeah. So I have them here. So a swelling or a pain in one leg, or a warmth or redness in your arm or your leg. So if you feel any kind of swelling in one leg, or warmth or redness. Now, this is the one that I did have. So there's four kind of symptoms. Short of breath. So if you are kind of unusually short of breath, and you go for, say you're used to going for a run, and then you suddenly can't, or you're finding it difficult. The other one is chest pain, which is what I got. And to describe it, it was like a sharp pain, especially when I took a deep breath in.
And it was on the right side.
It was on my right hand side hand side.
Yeah.
And that's why I wasn't worried, because I knew any pains to do with the heart were
on
the
left
hand.
Yes.
So everybody worries about a pain on the left hand side or anything going on there, because it was in
And is that because your right lung was worst affected?
That's exactly what it was. Right. That was the oxygen being restricted to that area, and that was that little bit of my lung dying.
Uh-huh. Right.
So that was the big pain that I got, and that the sharp. And the intake, whenever I inhaled breath. And one thing that I do every morning is I have a shower, but I also have a cold shower after it. And every time you turn on the cold shower, I stick this big, deep inhale of breath.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used to feel it down my side. Right. And that was. And then the last one is if you're coughing up blood. So if you cough up blood, but if you've got a sharp pain in your side, and you don't know what it is, or if you're short of breath, you need those two. Just go into hospital, because you have to.
And thanks for coming in, and that's important for people. I just remind people that Super Spaces starts tonight. Well worth the watch. RTÉ1 9:35. Has it changed? Like, I know it's a big question, but it has to be asked. Has it changed your outlook on life? Because you were this person who was unaffected by health matters, and now. It's quite a large health matter.
It does. It doesn't. What has it changed? I suppose when it comes to things that I want to do in life now, I only really kind of want to do things I enjoy. So right. I'm
tells me you've been doing that already. But Dermot had a close call there. There is nothing like a scare, like a brush with your mortality. It makes you grateful for your health.
Absolutely.
The only real wealth that we mortals have.
Yes.
My brother died suddenly at 55 from a heart attack of age. I had no symptoms, but he had no symptoms, but I went... Oh, sorry. I had no symptoms, but I went and got checked because of what happened to him, and I ended up getting a triple bypass. So you just get yourself checked.
And go into hospital, because the only way they can test this is with a D-dimer's blood test. You don't need to remember that. You can't go to your doctor. You can't, if you have any of these symptoms, straight into A&E.
Right. Well, good to see you in relatively good health, and your humour is good. Is that just for us, or is it?
No,
is it,
that's for me.
That's for you. Okay,
that's right. For me.
Dermot Bannon, thank you very much. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We're going back over to Sinead in Eulachon. She's out in Cabinteely, and she has Paul Dalton beside her. Hello, Sinead.
Hello, Ray. Yes, I'm here in the workshop / classroom in Cabinteely Community School. And I have Paul Dalton by my side. Already he's shown me how to check if the shock absorbers are working in a car. He's shown me how to change a battery. He's talked to me about the tracking and how to tell by looking at a tyre if the tracking is
very
out.
Good. Yes.
I tell you, I hope I can retain all this information. He has another few lessons up his sleeve, I think, for later on.
What
as
about
well.
Spark plugs? Spark plugs, Sinead?
That's coming up now in the next half hour.
She's a bright spark all right there.
Hey, you are, Paul. Paul, lovely to talk to you. So you've lived sort of cars and motoring from a very young age.
Oh, very, yeah. Like 15, 14.
Right. What did you start doing when you were 14?
I started serving petrol in a place called Smith's Rochdown Avenue.
Right.
Opposite the Victor Hotel there. It's Rochdown House now.
Yeah.
And then I went in to serve my time in the workshop.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned something that I haven't heard mentioned in a long time, the group cert exam.
Oh, yeah, it's a group.
So for people who don't know, wasn't that, that was done in second year?
That was before the junior cert.
Yes,
or
before the intercert, back in the day.
So you must be nearly the same age as me, are you?
Well, yeah. Well, what age are you?
Older than you, I think.
Right. So
I'm 63, by the way.
Right, I'm just 60, yeah. Okay, so we're about the same age. We know about
No, you've obviously knocked a few years off.
Yeah. So you've lived motor and cars all your life, and recently you turned your hand to teaching. What happened there?
I was approached by a girl that is in used to the equivalent to ANCO, and she asked me to come and help out down in Cabinteely Community School, doing a few night classes on adult education and trying to teach people how to maintain their car.
Right.
And be more aware and a little bit safety and how to do things without doing yourself damage if you want to. More's the point, yeah.
And they work on a real, and this is going to sound silly, but they work on a real car. You have a car there.
Oh, yeah. We have a car. We get the car into the workshop. Michael there, he organised a door in, and we were able to get the car into one of the classrooms now, and we're able to do an oil change on it. We show you how to do an oil change, how to remove the wheel, show you how to do the brakes, check your lights. We even do diagnostic computer equipment.
Right.
We can get you a discount in tyres.
Right.
We help you out and get you a discount in parts. We advise you in how to maintain your car. If you're doing a little bit maintenance yourself, we steer you in the right direction and how to
steer you in the right direction. There you go. Well, hey, I see what you did there. But I love this story, Paul, that you saved one of your students a fortune there. They got a quote for 240 for what?
No, he had replaced, it's called a neon light in a Volvo, and they're quite expensive, and we were able to acquire the light at a reasonable price, and we took the headlight unit out of the car and we replaced it in the class. And we changed it. The price of the light cost him €43.
right,
instead of 250 he was charged. Yeah.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Learning a skill and being able to do it yourself, saving all that money. And, of course, safety is important.
Safety is...
Cabinteely, adulteducation.ie, and there are night courses starting all over the country for this autumn. And if you're wondering about how to fill those dark nights between now and March, you might think of doing some sort of night course. Paul Dalton, lovely talking to you. Go back to work there. Spark plugs next. Before we go,
Ray, there's a lady in hospital and she's 95 and she donated the car to the class.
Great,
I just want to give her, Mary from Seafield in Shankill, and I just want to give her a heads up and hope you get better, Mary, soon.
We'll talk to you soon on the walk. She donated her Volkswagen Polo. Paul, lovely talking to you. Right, Sinead, good slán.
Thanks a million. Take care.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Ty Kiki, good afternoon.
Hi, Ray. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. You're in the Dublin Fringe Festival with Gatman.
That's it.
Your one-man show, which is autobiographical. Because you are a superhero called Gatman, and your nemesis
and I'm also an alcoholic, so.
Father Matthew. No, but you wrote the book Portrait of a Piss Artist as a Young Man.
Yeah,
and that was a very strong memoir. And this is not the play version, but inspired obviously by your life.
Yeah, they're both kind of vaguely autobiographical, I suppose. Well, actually, the book is very autobiographical. Yeah, otherwise I get into trouble for saying that, like, none of that stuff's real. Yeah. But the play takes certain liberties, but the spirit of it, I think, is the same. And, like, some of the ideas I was trying to get across is the metamorphic effect of a young person drinking when they might be tailor-made for alcoholism. And they feel a certain way that maybe their mates don't, you know. So I was really just trying to, because I think in Ireland, you know, and I feel like I've been banging on about this for a while, but I just feel like in Ireland we know all about alcohol, but we actually don't understand alcoholism at all.
Right. So you started drinking at what age?
15, 16, I think it was 15 and a half, 16, junior certain night.
Yeah, and in the play Gatman, that's where Gatman...
Yeah, so there's a guy called Murph who's a proxy for me, I suppose.
Yes.
And he's nervy and he's kind of insecure and he doesn't feel like he's a fighter like his brothers, and he's just usual Irish teenager. But what he didn't realise, I suppose, is that the effect it would have on him is not just ease the worries, but he'd have this effect where he feels like he's larger than life. He becomes a superhero in his mind. So it's kind of about the fantasy land of the kind of person in addiction. Just to create some sort of sense of understanding for why the addicted person behaves in a certain way, you know. So it's very hard to give up something if it makes you feel like a superhero.
Uh-huh.
That's my theory anyway.
And his nemesis in the play is Father Matthew.
Yeah.
Who was all about abstinence.
Yeah.
And he is painted as a baddie at the start.
Yeah, so he's the temperance priest in Cork, as you know, in Cork City. He's come to life. And Gatman, of course, wants to keep Cork full of Gat. No one works. Everyone's drinking in the fountain.
So Gat is a vernacular
Gat's kind of a working class Cork for drink.
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah. Right.
Some Cork people will dispute it, but I promise you it's a thing.
Right, so Father Matthew, he's trying to stop all the partying.
Yeah, get Cork sober again. And Gatman's determined to keep the booze situation going. So they're like mortal enemies and they fight it out. That's all running alongside Murph, though. So it's kind of like a dual monologue, and Murph is telling us about this amazing love affair he's had with alcohol, but how it's kind of started to go sour, and now Junior Certain Night is well in the distance and he's just trying to see his son and his life is falling apart.
Uh-huh.
So he's trying to visit his son on a supervised visit with kind of, okay, you know. So now, the two monologues inform each other, like.
Okay, and you've done this already. It's got a great reaction. It's now part of Dublin Fringe Festival this Friday to September 10th.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if people go to the Fringe Festival, they'll get tickets there.
Yeah, fringefest.com, I think.
Fringefest.com. And you would like this to be in schools.
So yeah.
Will you tell me how it's educational? Because like people take from things what they want to take from things, and they might just walk away and go, I want to be Gatman.
Fair point. Yeah. I didn't set out certainly to make it for schools. Like, I'd never think that way. Usually just an idea will come and I'll throw it down on paper and then people will make of it what they will. The people who've seen it in Cork keep saying this would be great for transition years and maybe even first year art students to see. And why I don't think people will go, I just want to be Gatman, is because actually what the play reveals is that the idea of Gatman is just a fantasy land. It's a fantasy land. The reality of the drinker, whilst it is great fun at the start, and that's something that I'm honest about in the play, I don't think you'd ever reach young people if you lie to them, if you just say like drugs are bad. They see through it. The reality is substances are brilliant for a long time for the person in addiction. They save them constantly. You know, I've talked to people all the time who've had drug issues, and I've had alcohol issues. If you didn't have those substances early on, you mightn't still be here. The problem is they long term don't work. They turn around on you, and they turn on you, I should say. And then you have to face the problems that made you drink all along. So the play doesn't glorify alcohol at all. It's just honest about it.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, because I grapple with this as well, because I think young people have to learn, right? The problem with that is, like your situation, if you want to experiment with drink or whatever, and you have what... They don't know if this exists, but let's, for want of a better phrase, an addictive personality.
The gene, like. Yeah.
So in a way, by telling people that it is a great thing, you might be turning them onto something that they may not be able to give up in the long run.
Well, I'm not saying it's a great thing. I'm saying when you're full of trauma, which I think most Irish people are, whether it's intergenerational or it's direct trauma, you feel insecure and your mental health is not good, there's a time and a place where this substance actually helps. I'm not saying go out and take the substance, but I have been lucky enough to speak to teenagers on this topic, and you don't reach them if you say drinking drugs are bad, never pick them up, don't ever do anything, because a lot of them are already drinking.
Yes.
That's the reality. Like the first time we had
finger pointing doesn't work.
No. But I think if you know, if somebody had said to me when I was in school, be careful with drugs because they really badly affect your mental health, I would have listened.
Okay.
But all they ever said is be careful with drugs.
The other thing, of course, is societal pressure and societal norms.
Mm.
And monkeys see, monkeys do. That's a bigger issue, I think, that if we in Ireland have a real serious conversation about our attitude to drink.
Exactly. And to say that it's, as you say, it's a societal thing. It's a family thing as well. Do you know, I find whether it's the alcoholic or the drug addict, you're always treated as if you're after doing wrong. You're the aberration and you need to go and get yourself clean, which is a word I hate. Go and get yourself sorted and come back into society, as opposed, why are we all drinking our heads off?
Yes.
Why is every sporting event and every festival full of drink advertising? Why is the family occasion founded on getting drunk? You know, we never look at that like, you know, it's always the individual.
Why do you think we don't?
I think we've still got a very punitive society here, like, and it's very much like you've acted out, you're morally questionable, you go and sort yourself out and then you can come back into the circle of love. Whereas like, the trauma expert, Gabor Maté, his whole thing is, let's look at why the person's drinking, and then we need to look at the family, and we need to look at the trauma, and we need to look at society. And I think that makes the person who's in trouble feel less like they've let everyone down, that we're all trying to fix things together. I know that sounds a bit utopian, but nobody just starts drinking their head off and getting into loads of trouble out of nothing, out of a cipher. Mm. They're all, I mean, I don't know anybody in addiction, and I'm lucky enough to spend a lot of time with people in recovery. I don't know anyone who wasn't originally traumatised by something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know anyone who's like, I'm just going to drink my head off and I hate my family. No one's like that.
Well,
like,
you know, that statistic, and nobody has contradicted it, and I've thrown it out a good few times, that over 70% of addicts have had some sort of trauma in their lives that they know of.
Exactly. You
know? So there's a strong basis for that.
Yeah.
So we need to tackle that.
Yes.
As opposed
to this chat has ended up being very serious, which I love, but I just want to let people know that the play is actually very funny as well. Like the first 20 minutes, you'll be laughing your head off.
Yeah, no. But I think that's why it's so important, because you're getting a very serious message across in a very funny way.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that has a place as well. So it's Gatman. And you have your outfit, your superhero outfit. Yes.
Yeah.
And even the fact that Gatman takes on Father Matthew is, you know, that's intriguing in itself.
Yes.
And it's part of the Dublin Fringe Festival. And it starts from this Friday to September 10th. And it's the work of Ty Hickey, who we're talking to now.
And it certainly doesn't glamorise it either, I would say that.
Yes.
It's the warts and all, actually, of alcoholism. So it's from the glamour to the gutter.
Yes.
It's the full gamut. So it's certainly not glamorising. I didn't find it glamorous.
From a man who knows.
Exactly. Yeah. I had great times, but it certainly wasn't glamorous towards the end. Yeah. And that's all in there.
And coincidentally, this is Recovery Month.
Yes. Actually,
now,
just
if you're around, I don't know if you run, but there's a recovery run on Saturday morning. We're running from Ballymun to Crumlin. It's a half marathon. You're welcome to join us.
What time?
It's half nine, and we're finished at lunchtime.
Okay.
Austin and the lads and myself, and it's a great run, and we visit addiction centres along the way. The recovery run.
I can't believe that now. That's lovely. I've been asked on a date with Ray, as far as I'm concerned.
Not a date.
And a recovery
run.
Date.
Tyke, thanks so much. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, buddy. Thank you.
Sarah and Cormac are on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.